You are listening to an American Free Press podcast.
Joining me on the line is Kyle Hunt, the leading organizer of the recent White Man March. Kyle, thanks for joining us today.
Well, thanks for having me on.
Kyle, the White Man March just went off on March 15th. Today's the 19th, just 4 days ago. It was on the Ides of March, and of course, that's the day that Julius Caesar was assassinated so many years ago. Did that have any significance?
Not really. It was a former colleague of mine, a show host on Renegade Broadcasting. It was his birthday as well, and he and I had been talking about the White Man March before it ever came into existence, somewhat jokingly. So it was his birthday, and also turned out to be Purim. Purim happened over the 15th and 16th of March. So what a coincidence with that as well. So it was a very advantageous day for a number of reasons. It was a Saturday. It was a couple days before St. Patrick's Day, which is a day when many white people will celebrate a great European ethnicity and culture, that of the Irish. And so it worked out well in many different ways. It's spring's kind of starting up here for us, and people are getting out there and showing their support for white interest.
I want to get into the White Man March and how it went in great detail. But before we do, for the benefit of listeners, can you give them a little bit of background about who you are?
Sure. I'm originally from the Northeast, pretty much, and I studied up there and double majored in psychology and theater. And I then went out and worked in Silicon Valley for a little while and have been doing some other kinds of consulting work since then. But really, I started getting active in the alternative media around 2009 and have been dabbling in a number of different areas of activism. And most recently, I have been advocating for the interests of white European Americans, because I see that they have been disenfranchised and bullied and silenced in so many different ways. And my activism doesn't just stop at the borders of America. I also like to advocate for the people of Europe who are also being inundated with mass immigration and forced integration, which is destroying their cultures.
Mm-hmm. I don't think anybody could argue that that is not the case. I mean, we're seeing it unfold before our very eyes. Now, I was introduced to the march by John Friend, who we're both acquainted with, and he did an article in January, Pro-White Rallies Organized Across Globe for March, for American Free Press newspaper. Well, he has a quote here from you, and it says, "We're planning to show that white people are organized and impassioned, that we know what the anti-white agenda is all about, and that we are dedicated to waking up as many of our folk as possible. We will make it clear that we will not sit idly by as whites are discriminated against, mocked, displaced, and violently attacked, all of which amount to white genocide, according to the United Nations' own definition of genocide." Which is true, and you just summed that up. And it amazes me that if there was a black man march, which there are plenty of those, or if there was a yellow man march, or a red man march, or whatever kind of march, a green man march.
A La Raza march. La Raza marches all the time.
Exactly. Any type of march, yeah, that's great. You know, they're celebrating their uniqueness. What do you think the main reasons are that when you have a white man march, and of course the whites were the ones who were undeniably primarily responsible for the creation of the United States of America, why do you think it is that when somebody organizes a white man march, that the reaction is one of revulsion?
Well, because we're living in a completely anti-white society. We've been living under a cultural Marxist program for decades upon decades now, and white people are being blamed for all of the world's ills. You'll hear them go on endlessly about how whites were completely responsible for slavery, neglecting to mention how whites themselves were enslaved many times in many different places, and how many non-whites also owned slaves in large number. Some of them white slaves as well. The North African Barbary pirates enslaved the white Europeans, and so did the Moors, and so did the Mongols, and the Huns, and all sorts of different invaders. The Jewish Khazars, they enslaved the Slavs, and that's where we get the word slave anyway, is from Slav. So we don't know our history, and it's been weaponized against us in so many different ways. People will talk endlessly about how white people genocided the Indians, and we don't even have any claim to this land. People who have had families that have been living here for hundreds of years. My ancestors, many of them, came over here in the 1600s, and yet I'm always told, if you don't like it, go back to Europe. Go back to Europe. As white people are dwindling in terms of percentage of the American population, we're being forced more and more to keep silent about the abuses that are taking place against us. The black-on-white violence, which is almost always covered up by this Jewish media, and the anti-white media that promotes films like Django Unchained, where Jamie Foxx gets to kill all the white people in the movie, and 12 Years a Slave, which is pretty much the Jewish torture porn, similar to what Eli Roth puts out. It's all intended to get us to feel that white people don't even have a right to speak up for themselves because they are the epitome of evil in this world. White people are racist, homophobes, xenophobes, supremacists, neo-Nazis, bigots, fascists, whatever word that they can muster to try to discredit us. But the fact of the matter is that they don't want to enter into an open dialogue, an open debate, because they can't win. The facts are on our side, and the best that they can do is ignore us. And since they haven't been able to ignore us recently, they have taken to ridiculing and mocking us.
Primarily, though, it is the Jews, isn't it? Because they're the ones who are in the seats of control.
Oh, yes. Jews push white guilt upon the white people living in all of the different formerly white countries. They also are holding white privilege conferences and have been pushing this idea. The only reason that white people have been successful ever is because they're privileged. And of course, they ignore all of the poor white people who are struggling to survive in America and abroad. And as you said, it is the Jews. Their quotes tell us exactly what their intentions are. There's a famous one by Barbara Lerner Spector, she's a Jew, that Jews will be resented because of their leading role in pushing multiculturalism in Europe. And if you look at the immigration officials in America and abroad, primarily, they are Jewish. And what they are doing is, by UN definition, genocide against the European peoples and the white people in America, Australia, and New Zealand, and elsewhere.
What do you think it is about the Jews that they are so obsessed, openly obsessed? Of course, this isn't something that your average person, I think, would be able to grasp unless they've studied it and researched it for a while, because the first thing you have to overcome is, geez, why are you saying Jews? That's anti-Semitic, even though they don't even understand what that means. But why do you think it is that, like, if you see, for example, the leading proponents of gun control in the U.S. Congress, they're all basically Jews. Why do you think it is that here in this case, Jews are in the forefront of, as far as I'm concerned, wanting to destroy the white race? What is it about Jews that put them in that position?
I think it's a deep-seated hatred of Gentiles, but in particular of white Gentiles. Noel Ignatieff, a famous Jewish anti-white, has said that the white race must be abolished and that the only way to get rid of the phenomenon of white supremacy is to get rid of white people. We've heard similar statements from Oprah as well, but the reason that they're doing this, the reason that they're pushing gun control, which is mainly aimed at taking away guns from white law-abiding citizens and not really doing much to address all of the thugs in the inner city who have guns, the reason that they're doing this is because they want total control, and I believe that they see the white European people as being the last thing standing in their way of complete world domination. They lay it all out, their plans for the communist takeover of the world, and part of that is inciting racial hatred, particularly against whites, and basically at the end of this, being able to lord over everyone else, the mixed masses. I do think that that's what they're going for. And they've been leading the crusade against whites in almost every single instance. For example, the NAACP was founded and led by Jews for much of its existence and was actively working with communists in the United States, including Michael King, also known as Martin Luther King Jr., which is not his real name.
Right.
They were working with Michael King to not stage peaceful rallies to get their message across, as we're so often told about their nonviolent tactics. They were causing mass riots in America. And this history, of course, has been completely wiped from the public consciousness, and you have a Martin Luther King Jr. Boulevard in every single town, it seems. So they're hailing communists and anti-white revolutionaries as the ultimate heroes in our society and doing everything they can to undermine Western civilization and institute their own perverse society in its stead.
And it seems like the blacks aren't the bad guys here. It looks like they're just going along with what the Jews are dictating. Would you agree with that?
Well, there are some black bad guys, but I don't think they're masterminding it. No, there are people who, among the black race, who are easily incited towards violence against white people because they've been propagandized through Jewish media to absolutely hate our very existence. We're being collectively punished for the alleged sins of our forefathers, and it's completely unjustified, and it's wrong, it's criminal to do this, to be collectively punished for the sins of your forefathers, even if they were committing crimes. That's not right, and white people are being forced out of the workforce and out of the school system, at least higher learning, through diversity quotas and affirmative action, which is really just government sponsored racism against white people. And of course, we're not allowed to say anything about it. And if we do, all of the different minorities seem to jump on us and attack us, do the bidding of these Jews in power. But as you said, I don't think that they're really the ones who are the ultimate bad guys here. The immigrants themselves are not taking a huge amount of our money. They're not necessarily making our societies any safer or more enriched, as they like to tell us. But these people are really just taking some of the low-hanging fruit, the low-wage jobs from not just white Americans, but also black youth and other people who are Americans. Their labor is being undercut by this mass immigration. And none of these people are really making out too well, to be honest. The people who are living off of welfare, yeah, it's a shame that you have to pay for the non-white family to have 12 children down the road. But when it's all considered, this welfare and the money that is basically given to illegal immigrants when they come into this country, it is such a small percentage of the money that is sent to Israel every single year, the billions and billions. And that in itself is just a small, tiny percentage of what was given to international Jewish banks to the tune of trillions of dollars in the bailout. So I think that once we deal with the real root of this problem, a lot of the other pieces will fall into place and people will be able to live amongst their own, choose to associate with whom they find to be agreeable, so that we have freedom of association restored in America and the laws of the land are followed, so that not anybody who just comes into this country as an illegal invader breaking the laws of the land is rewarded for it.
Very well said. And I'm so glad that you elaborated on all of the important angles of this, because without identifying who really is the bad guy, and you absolutely have, then I don't think that this venture would be as hopefully successful as it was and is going to be. So let's get to the actual march itself. Let's start from the beginning. When did you first decide that you were going to do it? What was the date that you decided you were going to organize it? What did you do to organize it? And talk about leading up to the day.
Sure. Well, I'm pretty sure that the idea was spawned in December of 2013. And I wanted to give us enough time to actually get things organized, make this professional, get all of the materials out to people and do the press circuits. You know, we have a really thriving alternative media that has helped to get the word out about this. So I was able to really take this idea and help make it viral and get people talking about it. And that's really some of the big work that went into it. Writing different articles, getting them shared around, putting together some videos that would get people excited. The real work that went into planning it, in addition to, of course, getting our banners ready, collecting funds, doing a fundraising drive in order to get our flyers and banners printed, and also just putting out different tactical ideas as to how people can avoid confrontation with anti-racists or anti-fascists who are very violent and are pretty much given a free pass by the Southern Poverty Law Center, headed up by the sexual degenerate Morris Dees and his little crony there, Mark Potok. These anti-racist, anti-fascist groups deny white people, pro-white people, the freedom of association and the freedom of speech. They do not think that those laws apply to us. And in fact, it seems that they very well might not, as there's a quotation from a former U.S. chairwoman on the U.S. Commission on Civil Rights, Mary Frances Berry, and she said, "Civil rights laws were not passed to protect the rights of white men and do not apply to them." So we wanted to make sure that we avoided these confrontations, because if anything was to happen, if one of our activists was to be beaten and even just stood up for himself and tried to protect himself, you could rest assured that he would be made out to be the bad guy and the one that's charged with a hate crime or anything like that. So our people were encouraged to go out and be a little bit sneaky about what they were doing, sometimes giving false locations to the press and to the anti-racist, so that they were all confused and running around like chickens with their heads cut off, while our people were out doing stealthy banner drops and leafleting and putting up stickers and things like that.
Cool. Starting in December, let's go to March 15th. Where was it? What time did it start? What happened during the march? How many people were there? And anything significant that occurred that day?
Sure. Well, just a few days leading up to the march, a few ultra-leftist publications got wind of this, pretty much starting with the Village Voice in New York City. And they caused such an uproar, reporting on this march like there were going to be hordes of white people taking to the streets in every single big city. And we had a lot of people out there who were against us that actually helped to make this an incredible success. They organized counter-protests. There was a huge counter-protest in Portland with lots of anti-fascists walking around protesting with their different slogans. One of them was something like, "We're here, we're queer, we're anarchists, and we'll F you up the rear." Another one, "No racists, no neo-Nazis, no KKK, no fascist USA." That's another one they like to use. But they were also on Twitter going nuts, driving our hashtags to be White Man March and also their own White Man March protest signs. They drove them up to the top of Twitter worldwide trending. They actually reached number one during that day as well.
Wow.
And that was absolutely amazing. We took over Twitter for almost an entire day with the help of these people who are mocking us and often proving our points through their mocking.
All right, exactly.
And so our activists, being smarter, realize that if we're in a struggle where we are greatly outnumbered at this point, it is not advantageous to go out into, let's say, open combat. A good analogy would be the American Revolution, where the American colonists, the Minutemen, and the regulars, they were faced with a very well-organized, funded opposition in the Redcoats. This was a massive imperial power. You can't go out toe-to-toe with them and win. So they used guerrilla tactics. And that's what we've been doing in this struggle. We're using guerrilla marketing, guerrilla activism to get our message across. And so people were hanging up signs over freeways all over the United States, in the United Kingdom. People were even active in Ireland, in continental Europe, in Australia, in New Zealand, in many different states around the United States. They were also handing out the flyers. They were putting up the stickers. They were doing whatever they could to advocate for the race on this day. And it didn't have to be a whole lot. It could be something small. And they could be doing things online as well. So it was a non-conventional march. But just the word march being in there, the White Man March, got our opposition so riled up perfectly that they really helped us do a lot of the heavy lifting. And because of all of the commotion that was caused on this day, we got a massive amount of press from some extreme outlets. I do feel like it was squashed at a certain level so that the real big boys would not be reporting on it. But we had articles in Raw Story, Vice, Gawker, Salon, New York Observer, International Business Times, Village Voice, as I said, Counterpunch, Jezebel, and many others around the world. I had an interview with Tom Hartman on his American cable TV news show, and also I was interviewed on the number one morning radio show in Canada. So the word really got out there, and many, many people were exposed to our message, even if it was in articles that were trying to denigrate what we were doing. And these articles, some of them were getting 10,000 plus shares, likes on Facebook. And as impressive as some of these articles were with tons of comments and sharing going on, actually none of them beat out our about page at whitemanmarch.com. And on the day of the march, on March 15th, we had 20,000 likes on that Q&A that I had done with John Friend for the American Freedom Party article. So it seems like our message is really resonating with people, and we're giving a voice to the silent majority.
That's great. So what about the march itself? Where exactly was it? How many people participated in it?
Well, there were bigger demonstrations in a few different locations. In Ohio, some people were out, you know, waving on the side of the road with their banners. And a couple of KKK guys and their paraphernalia showed up, incidentally, right at the same time that the news crews showed up. So that was unfortunate. I explicitly said that I do not want neo-Nazi or KKK imagery to be associated with the event. But there's very little that can be done to prevent that. And hopefully next time, our activists know just to disassociate themselves from such people.
They might not have even been actual KKK, right?
Exactly. It does not take much to get a costume and pay somebody to go out there and try to make us look foolish. It's great that the timing also worked out right when the news crews show up. But the interesting thing about this is that even though there were guys dressed up as KKK there, the public apparently was still very receptive of the message. People were still honking their horns, showing signs of support. And that's actually the report I've gotten from most places where people were hanging up their signs and doing different street activism, was that people were overwhelmingly thrilled to see white people out there taking a stand for themselves. And there were some incidents that weren't so great. For example, in Illinois, a lone activist, I guess, was tricked by the local anti-racist into thinking he was going to meet up with other activists. When he got there, he was maced and beaten. So This shows what our opposition is really all about, which is silencing us through violence. And it shows that our people are not looking for violence whatsoever. A march did actually take place through that town in Illinois by other people on that day. A good example of people actually getting out there on the street was in Knoxville, Tennessee, where a number of people showed up and there was some confrontations, not anything violent, just people shouting back and forth, and of course signs of support as well. But we didn't have too many large-scale demonstrations that were actual marches through towns or cities, though I do expect that we might be seeing some of those in the near future.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so there really wasn't one town or city that had a huge number of people, you're saying?
Part of our strength, though, is that we're very decentralized, that people can do something wherever they are, regardless of how many people that they know who support them. They can get the message out there in some ways that are very clever as well. One of the activists had a box truck, and he put a massive sign on the back of this box truck and drove down the highway in Texas, and a lot of support from what I hear.
Mm-hmm. Excellent. What do we got planned for next year? Anything?
Well, actually, I'm looking to have people get out there and be active the third Saturday of every month, because I feel like we've generated a whole lot of momentum with this, and I'd like to see things keep rolling. And I think it's not the time to let up, as our enemies have been really backed into a corner in many different ways. And the more that we can keep exposing them as the criminals, the genocidal maniacs that they are, the better. We are on the offensive, we have the moral high ground, and I see our enemies running scared, so we're going to keep pressing forward.
Any particular reason why it's the third Saturday of the month? Any significance to that?
Oh, simply because Saturdays are days when more people would be likely to show up at events because they could have the day off, and also because March 15th was the third Saturday of March, so I just wanted to keep it consistent.
Gotcha. Okay, cool. Kyle, why don't you let the listeners know about your site and other sites that you think would be of interest to them if this is something that they want to get involved in?
Sure. Well, people can go to whitemanmarch.com and also renegadebroadcasting.com. And then there's also a site called whitegenocideproject.com. And this covers a lot of stories which show the anti-white bias that exists everywhere in the media, academia, the government, really, honestly, everywhere. They covered the story about the college in Olympia, Washington, that had excluded white staffers from their diversity happy hour, which really just goes to show what diversity is all about. It means no white people allowed, which is genocidal, having policies such as this. Well, our activists actually were out there 4 days after this story broke and had a big banner below the Diversity and Equity Center that read, "Diversity equals white genocide." So it's really great to be spreading this message. And as you pointed out, it really is not about hatred or supremacy over any other race. What we are doing is promoting love and protection for white people, because we are being attacked at many different levels, and no one has been standing up for our interests for quite some time. So it's a time that some people did, and of course we'll be attacked for it. We'll be called all the different names: racist, bigot, Nazi, KKK, supremacist, hater, Nazi who wants to kill 6 million Jews. They'll call us whatever they can, but they won't openly debate us on our points, because, as we made clear, it's not debatable, and genocide cannot be justified.
Well, Kyle, I want to say that I personally am very happy that you are out there inspired to do this and inspired to keep going. It sounds to me like you are. It's about time that somebody did this. I've thought about this over the years, that there should be some kind of, instead of BET, Black Entertainment Television, White Entertainment Television. I know there's a lot of people who feel the same way, a lot of people who wish that white values could come back to the United States after the Jewish influence that has corrupted it and destroyed it and denigrated it so much. And I think that you might be on to something. I hope you are. And I personally want to thank you for everything that you're doing. And I also want to thank you for the time you took out today explaining all this to the listeners. And I'm looking forward to talking to you again in the future.
Great. I really appreciate being on the show. Thank you for having me. And it was a pleasure to be here.